Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to another version of our Talk Theater in Chicago's podcast. My guest this week is someone who is fairly new to Chicago, probably not too well known, but will be, I think, after this. Say hello to Patrick Bellix. Am I saying your name right?
Yes, you are. Okay. Thank you so much for having me, Tom.
He runs Spartan Theater Company, and they're a new, young, little theater company that attempted to do a play. When I got the press release, it said they're doing a Tony Kushner play. I said, wow, that's going to be interesting. It's usually something that Steppenwolf or Goodman or Writers Theater would do.
Absolutely.
What got you guys to attempt to do a Tony Kushner play?
Well, we had a submission, basically, from Laura Elisek, who directed the play. And the first time I saw it, I had that kind of gut reaction that I think maybe you had, which is that, oh, it's Kushner. So there's something exciting and yet scary about doing that, taking that on.
Which one is it now?
Laura Elisek.
The Kushner play.
The Kushner play, A Bright Room Called Day. So it was one of the plays that he wrote before Angels in America, which we all know is one of the best and most important plays of the last 40 years. And I had that reaction that it would be very daunting to take on, but that was also very exciting. And when you're a young company, I feel as though you need to take risks. You can't just stick with what everyone else does. Everyone else is producing.
Yeah, but there's risks, and then there's doing Tony Kushner.
Yeah.
That really shows some chutzpah for you and your company to attempt that.
Well, thank you, yeah.
And the best part, let me throw this in, you nailed it.
Well, thank you.
It was a terrific production. Folks, you got to get out there and see it.
I appreciate that. Thank you, yeah. And so we decided that we wanted to go ahead and do it after I recognized that the themes of the play kind of go along with what's happening now in the political climate.
It sure is.
Definitely. So we decided to go ahead and pull up our pants and really work hard in trying to get this just right, that we think that a modern, contemporary version of this would really service the community and us as a theater company and show off what we think that we can do.
Fantastic. Well, tell us about a little bit about the story and some of the characters, because I thought your casting was terrific.
Well, thank you. Yeah, the play is about a group of friends in Germany during the 1930s, right before World War II breaks out, during the rise of Hitler and fascism. And most entertainment or media, I feel like they usually center their stories center around the Nazi Party, the powers that be that caused this tragedy. Or the victims, the Jewish people, and it affected. But this is interesting in that it's the people on the sidelines, the people who were against it.
They were the young communists.
Yeah, yeah.
In the Weimar Republic just before Hitler.
Yeah, exactly. And there was even some people there that are apathetic about it. And it's intercut with this woman who's moving from New York to Germany into the same apartment that these friends occupied. And she's on there on a quest of sorts to try and find parallels between the Reagan administration and the political climate of back then. And I think the theme of the play more or less is to get everybody to question. You know, there's a line in the play about, are these really comparable? You know, the horrible tragedy that surrounded the Holocaust, the crimes that Hitler committed, and, you know, Reagan, for instance, ignoring the AIDS crisis. Is that really comparable? And I believe what she says is something to the effect of, not directly comparable, but what we need to do is question these things. If these people are in the same wheelhouse, we should always question this, which I thought was perfect for this time. Though.
Yeah, and Kushner talks to the characters are young liberals, mm-hmm. which happen to be, it was fashionable then to be communists,
mm-hmm.
socialists and communists, because they kind of didn't know what that was.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a unique group.
They were.
Which Kushner's writing certainly brought them out, but also your cast did.
They did, yes. Yeah, no, that we deliberately had a younger cast to kind of skew it more towards something that today people can relate to, because a lot of the younger liberals today are younger people in their 20s, mid-20s to late 20s, and of course the early 20s, as I was when I first read this play. And then on top of that, we kind of did a mixed race race sort of colorblind casting. Amanda De La Guardia, who plays Agnes, is actually a Mexican American, and she's absolutely brilliant in the role. And I think
she's unbelievable.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, she lends another element to the casting that allows us to identify with these people as liberals of our day and age.
Well, I certainly think that's valid to take a play that some people could call dated because it was written in 85 and the modern girl is attacking Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that could be, I wouldn't say Obama, but it would certainly be Bush the second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And I think she would have changed it to some of the members of the Congress.
Yeah, I believe it. There's definitely some parallels you can draw to today, but I think that what's great about the play is that it lets us draw those parallels, whether you want to draw those parallels to Bush or to Obama or...
Well, tell us about your director, because I thought she did a terrific job. In a play that's complex, as Kushner's plays are,
mm-hmm.
and you're jumping around different time things, and you go from reality to comic mm-hmm. to almost absurdity.
Mm-hmm.
How did she approach it?
Well, what she did that was incredible, I felt, was that not only did she give us the knowledge and give us the vocabulary very well through music and light and setting, the differences, that dichotomy between the 80s and the 30s, but she also kept the pace moving. You know, this
yes.
play normally is like, normally it's a beast of like 3 hours, 3.5 hours, and it really comes down to...
About 2:20.
2:20. It was about 2:15, and then we had a 10-minute intermission. And it's normally a giant beast. And even in the prologue that Kushner wrote for the play, if you buy a copy of Bright Room, he says, you can cut a lot of this out. You know,
he said that?
Yeah, he has.
So he gave you a license to do that?
Yeah. Okay. He had...
That's rare. Mm-hmm. I mean, Everaldi says you can cut one comma, maybe.
Yeah, maybe, if you really feel the need. So, it came out to about 2:15, and it just moves along.
Yes,
that was my main concern when we were going into the process, and she did a great job with pace. She did a great job of giving us the vocabulary of what we needed to know to understand the play, and most of all, she gave us the connection. You know, a lot of Kushner's work, I think, sometimes can come off just flat because they're talking about, you know,
long speeches of political diatribes. Yeah.
Yeah, but every person on that stage is connected to it in some passionate way,
and it came across.
Good, yeah, I'm glad.
And tell us your casting process, because I noticed afterward that a lot of the key players are part of your ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
Did they get cast because they're in your ensemble, or did they get cast because they're the right ones for the role?
You know, we actually, for this one, I've always been very adamant that casting is kind of the self-contained part of the productions that should not be affected by the outside world. So if we don't actually have a literal ensemble. We have a group of people who work with us on a regular basis, on an administrative level, on a backstage level, but we also keep them in our minds in case we wanted to use them for casting. And we have used a lot of people that we work with backstage, on stage as well. But when we came to the casting process, I said, cast who you think is right for the role. You know, we've outlined thematically what we think would be the best situation for these characters, for these actors to play these characters. Really focus on that, and don't be worried about any sort of politics related to, you know, who's going to show.
That frees you up to create some strong art.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. I that's something I feel very strongly about, that politics should be left out of the casting process.
But of course, you're smart enough to get a group of people who are pretty strong.
Yeah. That's the main thing. And you know, there are people that we work with on a regular basis, but that's because we know them. We know what they can do. We know what they're capable of.
Yeah, and in all things equal, people always hire who they're comfortable with, assuming they can do the role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's part of loyalty, and that's part of what Chicago theater does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a lot of loyalty here, and that's what people don't understand. That how even if you don't get cast in the show, if you were with that company in one other show, you're still loyal and you support it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You don't blacklist any theater company. They're all
so
great.
Tell us about some of the characters that you
have one character who plays the devil. Tell us about it.
Yes, our co-founder, Andy Monson, he plays actually two roles in the show, and that was part of our minimalist approach to the show. We wanted to play with the idea of double casting. He plays one character who is called Herr Svetz in the show, and Herr Svetz, for all intents and purposes, is the devil. In fact, they refer to him directly as the devil.
Interesting take on the devil.
He plays it as this kind of like grotesque, asthmatic, just husk of a being that manifests on stage.
He's also comic too.
Oh yeah, he's incredibly funny on top of that. And not many people, I think, could go from that comedic display being completely scary, completely funny at the same time.
Yeah,
you know,
he's a
talent.
And then he plays
Dialta. He plays Dialta, who I believe it's German for the old one.
Is she the young girl in the future? Is that what we were debating?
That's funny. That's funny because we wanted you to. wanted to debate up where is this an older Agnes, or is this a younger Zilla? Zilla being the woman in the 1980s. And our personally, our opinion is that she's actually an older Agnes.
That's what I thought. What does Kushner say about it? Does he say anything?
I believe he leaves it up to you. I don't believe he actually has made an outright statement about that. But we definitely wanted to have this sort of mystery surrounding
this. She's this old lady. I mean, he changes his persona. Mm-hmm. Of course, the makeup has to come on and off too. But
yeah.
But that's a very interesting for him to do.
Yes, he performs well. It's physicality, I think, that he brings out.
Yeah.
These two characters are so vastly different. It's definitely a showcase for him.
Yeah, it definitely, and it helps the play too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So give us a little commercial for the play. I know it's only going to run for another week,
mm-hmm.
But where is it at and so forth?
Well, it's at CIC, the Chemically Imbalanced Theater. It is running, today would be Saturday.
This will be out Monday.
Yeah, this will be out on Monday. It'll be this coming Friday when you're hearing this at 7:30 p.m., the following day at 7:30 p.m. as well. And then we have a Sunday matinee at 3 p.m. that is our closer. So if you're able to make it out. I think it's a great play. I think you'll really enjoy it.
Well, even if you don't, you have to keep Spartan Theater Company in mind because they have proven that they really know how to do theater. The Closer?
Closer,
the
yes. Yeah. Closer.
Tell us about that. Is that the one you did before this?
Yes. We had done one show at the Chicago Fringe Festival in between Closer and Bright Room. But Closer we had done at the Den, and we really enjoyed that show. That was a show that really dealt with kind of minimalist casting, minimalist set pieces. I think, you know, every single show that we do, we try and find some sort of element of minimalism other than just there's no set. You know, when we did...
Why?
Because I feel as though we can stretch the limits of what minimalism means. That the first thing I ever hear is whenever somebody asks, oh, you're a minimalist theater company, they say, oh, so there's just no set. Well, yes and no.
That's part of it, but what else is?
We can explore what elements, I believe. A lot of people think of minimalism as the arbitrary removal of things, that you don't need it, you know. I think of it as choosing specific elements in order to enhance things, in order to focus things onto like specific moments and themes and ideas. An example would be that in Closer, we had a scene that closed just before intermission that involved two people having two different arguments, both in apartments. And from my understanding of the script, they wanted us to set up two different apartments. And I said, instead, let's go ahead and have one apartment, one shared space that they both live on. And it lends us a new idea here, the idea that we have two different people split down the middle who seem to be living in the same space but are having two different arguments and are in two different worlds, but they're always in, they always seem to be there in the back of their minds, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's clever, and I think that adds another element for the meaning. But mm-hmm. I like minimalist.
Yeah, me too.
I think more people ought to do that because sometimes, you know, the look can be terrific, and and it can be boring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of distracts, I think, sometimes the spectacle of everything. And I think that when we bring minimalism in, it really makes you focus on the acting and the words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the storytelling. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely.
So tell us what the future is for you guys now.
Well, I think that next year we're just about to finalize everything with the 2015 season. I do know that we are going to be doing On an Average Day by John Kolvenbach. That's going to be directed by the former artistic director of Drury Lane, Mr. Ray Fruin.
I know Ray very well. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's at Roosevelt.
Yes, yeah, that's where a bunch of us went to school. So that's where a bunch of us met.
By the way, did you see when he played King Arthur in Camelot?
I didn't.
Ask him about that. He was terrific in it.
Oh, yeah,
he didn't play it. You know how often they play it as kind of a wimpy king, but he's a big guy with the beard and everything, and he played it in regal. Mm-hmm. And he's a heck of a singer.
Oh, he is. Yeah. He sang for us a couple times while we were in the school, and we were just blown away.
That's quite a coup to get him to come in.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. And it's gonna star myself and Andy Monson, who we've been talking about. Okay. And then we are going to be doing the Chicago Fringe Festival again.
Tell us a little about that. I'm not a big Fringe Festival guy, only because it conflicts so much with the schedule. Tell us a little about that.
Well, it's great because we go out there. It's out in Jeff Park every single year, or has been for the past 2 years. I believe it'll be there next year. And there's a bunch of just theater artists and other artists, performance artists, comedians that come in there and do their art. And I believe it's only for 2 weekends, and then it's gone. And for the past few few years that we've been there, we've always gotten good crowds, and they've been very excited to see us there.
Can you help administer it?
Yeah. Okay. I produce whatever. I don't administer the shows.
Get me on your list for that, and I'll come, or I'll send some, because I've got two real good reviewers now that are working with me.
I will. I definitely will. Yeah. But no, normally we just do a one-man show out there. The past show that we did there was called 10 and 2. It was actually a three-person show. It's normally written by a sort of resident playwright of ours named Joe Westcott, who does some incredible work. And then after that, we're going to be heading back into the Wicker Park or the Lakeview area. We're going to be doing Walk in the Woods by Lee Blessing.
I know that play. That's a good play.
I'm very excited about it. I think it'll be very culturally relevant at the time. And I'm going to direct that myself. And I think it's just going to be a great experience.
That's terrific. So tell us a little bit more about your ensemble people and who helps run it. You're the head guy, right?
I am, yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm the artistic director, and Andy Monson, who we've talked a lot about, is the associate artistic director, and he's kind of my Rocky when we're making decisions. Then we also have Tim Bickle, who is the sound designer for all of our shows, has been since we started back in 2012.
He did the
Bright Room Called Day, yes. Yeah.
And that was effective without a lot of to it, because it's part of your minimalism, right? But just the way it was set up, it was smart.
Yeah, exactly. But again, like very specific choices that were made, and simplicity, I think, was a great advantage.
How's the show doing?
It's going good. It's going good so far.
Yeah, getting good houses.
Yeah. So we're going to get some good houses. I'm excited about it. And review wise, we've gotten more critics to come. Every week we had two last night, and almost all the reviews have been great.
And that's good. Mm-hmm. And at this point, with you guys being new enough company, even they come out the last weekend, just for you to get the publicity, so people know you guys are on the map.
Yeah, more than welcome. Yeah, they're more than welcome.
And have they all? They've all been pretty positive, right?
Yeah. They're all in the recommended, strongly recommended, highly recommended, and they all seem to say the same thing, that they're really surprised that a Kushner play could be pulled off so well, so simply and so.
Well, that's what
intensely
got me interested. Yeah. I knew it'd either be great or horrible, because that's so hard to do. And I'll tell you, I've seen major theater companies with big budgets screw up his work.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
So, are you going to be doing any more Tony Kushner writes?
I'm open to it. I'm going to be taking a look. I mean, I think that if we were to ever do Angels in America, I would want to have like a really good reason to do it. You know, that's important to me. What shows we do, like, there's got to be
it's been done a number of times here.
Yeah,
you'd be competing with some really great people, like Court just did a couple of years ago. Amazing.
Yeah, and then
you need like the Larry Yondos and all to make that work.
There's got to be like a good sweet spot, a moment that like an opening that I see that.
He's got some other plays that are kind of interesting.
Yeah. And so that's why I'm really interested in taking a look and seeing if he's got he's got anything that we think that we can definitely do minimally and accentuate his ideas.
Who else do you have in your radar as far as playwrights?
I would like to do Shakespeare at some point, but again, it's one of those things where not only is it an element of every young theater company does Shakespeare, and I kind of want to avoid that because it's the obvious choice. But
especially when they can't articulate it, that drives me nuts.
Yeah,
you know, when they're speaking lines and they don't know what they're saying. Because they have the punctuation in the exact same spot in every line.
Exactly.
Drives me crazy.
Exactly. Yeah. So I again, it'd be a situation where we have to have a very good reason to do it. The only thing I thought about so far is that a bunch of Shakespeare is done. You know, in the end, every time we do Hamlet in the city, there's always a concept behind it. There's got to be
so many. Yeah.
And I'm wondering if maybe the concept for this is that there is no concept. That's the minimalist element to it. And
it's got some possibility.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly what that means yet, but that's what's kind of gestating in my mind. You know,
this would you do a tragedy or a comedy?
I mean, I do personally love Hamlet, but it is
the greatest play ever written.
Oh yeah. It's my favorite Shakespeare show, so I would love to do Hamlet. There have been a few ideas tossed around for Macbeth and Romeo and Juliet, but it's all going to end up being about what would work out for that time.
Richard III, you ought to consider.
Richard III.
Andy would be great at that.
I think in college at one point, Andy and I both separately did scenes where we both played Richard III at one point.
Okay.
So that would definitely be something to look into.
Okay. So who else now? What about plays of color?
I definitely would be interested in doing that in the future.
August Wilson?
August.
And you guys had the chutzpah to Kushner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I definitely would be interested in looking into that in the future. I think that is going to come down to, again, the exact right play at the right time that I feel that would best service the community and what we're trying to do that year. You know, everything about choosing plays in the season, it's all kind of, in my experience at least, for the past 3 years, it's about what evolves organically in terms of who's available and how everything's being steered. Like this year, we haven't chosen the show that we're doing at the Fringe Festival yet, but we're doing one show in the spring, which is a duet. There's two people, and then we have another show going on in the fall, which is another duet. So this seems to be where we're headed. So I would love the Fringe Festival show to be a duet. I would love for it to be a duet that has some women involved, because the two other plays are both men. So I think that would be something that would be great to kind of highlight in that show. Something that we fall in line, but we're not doing the same thing the entire way through.
How do you balance creating art, doing shows that you guys want to do, and doing them well, with doing those that people want to see and that can make you some money? That's always a dilemma that every young theater company has to face.
Delicately. We do it delicately, because I think that there is definitely something to be said for young companies choosing to do only original works, and at the same time...
It's highly risky.
And especially if nobody knows you. At the same time, I think it's very important to be developing and adding to the canon, if you will.
Absolutely.
American theater.
I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah.
So, you know, as much as we do, you know, we're doing two plays this year and two plays next year that are previously published, what we found is that we want to make the Chicago Fringe Festival where we premiere our original works. And so we're slowly kind of building up. You know, last year we did three shows there. This year we did three shows. We're looking into right now hopefully doing five shows at the Chicago Fringe Festival to really kind of send that point home.
Oh, that's good. And but you have enough, you get enough cash flow, and you guys do fill out the grant apps and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's actually what we're doing right now. Right now we have the development director for Lifeline Theaters on our board, who is going through all of the other grants. Alex Kiger is a director of development for Lifeline, and he's helping us out right now, going through grants, what we can apply for, what we should apply
for. Make sure you put all these nice reviews you've been getting into it.
I will.
That doesn't hurt at all.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So once you have you pick your shows.
Mm-hmm.
What about a permanent home?
You know, I would love to have a permanent home. That's something that I you know, initially when you start a theater company, the first thing that you want more than anything is to get everybody to believe you know this is a real thing, because there's so many theater companies that, you know, begin and fail with the first show. After people start to take you seriously, the big thing is that you need to get incorporated, you need to get your tax exempt status, and now that we have that, I was kind of thinking, what is the next step? And a venue is something that I definitely would look forward to. You know, at the moment,
Next Theater's available.
I heard that the other day.
But are you guys eligible for the Jeff Committee to come out?
We will be, I believe.
It's too bad you weren't for this one, because I'll tell you what it got recommended.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, no, I believe we will be next year or the year after. I think there has something to do with the amount of shows that you do per year. That is what we will have to...
You will definitely want that.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to. The Jeff Committee, I'm looking forward to, you know, a venue, and I guess what's after the venue is equity.
Is there any way you guys get a permanent rental home somewhere like the Den?
I would love to. I'm keeping my eyes open for that. The idea of a venue becoming a resident at a venue,
because there are a number of venues that are now starting to be open to renting when they're not doing things, and even to do off night, which isn't bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, off night, Oracle does pretty good on some of the off night, even Monday night shows.
Yeah,
they do real well with it.
Yeah, our first show actually, Train of Thought, was in. We did off nights at Greenhouse. The off nights can work out pretty well. I'm keeping my eyes out for all of that. That's part of our development process that we're doing with the board
right
now.
So you guys are in this for the long haul.
We definitely are.
All right, where do you want to be, and where does your company want to be in 5 or 10 years?
I think that in about 5 or 10 years, we'd love to have a venue where we have a base audience that is very loyal to us, that comes to all of our shows and subscriptions, that we're able to produce three to four major plays per year, and really be recognized as a theater that produces great original work, and as our mission statement states, reinvigorated classics. It's a good play on words. And just has some great acting and great storytelling.
Now, with that, and personally, you're an artistic director,
mm-hmm.
you're an actor, and you're a director.
Mm-hmm.
Which one of those do you think you'll eventually be? All of them? Some of them? None of them?
I think all of them. I think it was something I didn't set out to do. I didn't set out to be an artistic director. This all started when I graduated college as an actor, and at one point Andy Monson came to me and he said, I have this script for a play that I've written that I want to perform, a one-man show. I know you want to direct. Do you want to direct me in this? So we put on that show, and while we were putting on that show, I said I really love this, and so I talked to him about the possibility of starting a theater company, and that turned into, we did Talk Radio by Eric Bogosian in the fall of 2002 or 2012, and it kept going from there, and we really felt like, you know, we were striking on something hot, that we had a company that could bring an interesting flavor, interesting voice to the Chicago
community. It's definitely unique, yes.
Yeah.
That's good. And, you know, it's possible to be all three.
Mm-hmm.
PJ Powers is an actor and an artistic director, mm-hmm. which is a rare comedy. He doesn't direct them.
Mm-hmm.
At least not yet.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's possible to do all
three. I've very much enjoyed all three for the past couple of years that I've been doing it.
You have no preference at this point?
At this point, I would love to just bounce back and forth, and to the third one, and back to the first one.
What about working for other companies as an actor?
Absolutely.
You
have. I have. Yeah. I auditioned for Steppenwolf this past spring. I have performed this past year in a show that was not of my company. And, you know, right now I'm looking into other directing opportunities in addition to my theater.
Well, that's good, because yeah, you got to keep going. You got to keep expanding, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because that's something that Andy and I talked about. Because Andy has worked with Steppenwolf, and Andy has worked outside of the theater company, and he said that, you know, anything that we do for ourselves is also good publicity for the company. You know, we always have the learning curve too.
Yeah, yeah, being out and doing it. It's nothing mm-hmm. like doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great. I think you guys are going to have a good future. And folks, you got one more week to see A Bright Room Called Day by Tony Kushner, and get out and see it. And thanks for listening. Go see a play this week.
Thank you very much.